Chapter 11. Phosphex, Rebute Gilliman would later write, was without a doubt singularly the most deplorable man-manufactured weapon that humanity has ever, to its shame, unleashed upon a living world. An incendiary of the most volatile nature, it had the capacity to burn without oxygen and with next to no fuel source. It was capable of burning underwater. In fact, it set the water itself alight and would burn through solid rock, through the most fire-hardened ceramite and adamantium, absolutely devastating any carbon-based life that it touched. Known variously as the living fire, crawling death, and ice fire, due to its attraction to movement and sub-zero burning temperature, once unleashed, it expanded exponentially, burning everything in its path. It was designed for one purpose, the absolute eradication of life on a world. The taint of its residue was far more enduring even than the most deadly radiation from nuclear fallout and plasma core exposure, rendering any lands exposed to its touch uninhabitable. Not even the Death Guard favoured its use in any but the most extreme circumstances, and even then only on the order of a legion's most senior echelons of command. The use of Phosphex had only twice been sanctioned for use by the Primarch of the 13th Legion, and then only upon isolated regions. But a small number of its most powerful warships held the munitions in their armories still, for use in extremis. Percepton Primus, Chapter Master Decimus had decreed, was such a case. A single man-portable Phosphex bomb had the capacity to contaminate the air and soil where it was detonated for 1,000 years. Never in Legion history had an entire ship's payload of Phosphex warheads been unleashed in one bombardment. In theoretical simulations, a world that suffered such an attack would never recover. In all, 24 Mortalis-class atmospheric missiles were launched from the Righteous Fury at the surface of Percepton Primus. All of them struck the planet's singular supercontinent, spread across a dispersal zone 10,000 kilometers wide. Each targeted a key strategic location, the coordinates of which had been uploaded from the communications subbase within the mountains. Word-bearers' extraction points, the city of Massilia, the field of war where the chapter master had drawn the enemy legionaries in strength. The Righteous Fury was destroyed with all hands 3 minutes and 27 seconds after the first payload was launched. The 17th Legion cruiser Sanctified claimed the kill. By then, the surface of Percepton Primus was already burning. It was harder to remove a legionary's primary heart than one might expect, even one not wearing his armoured plate. First, there was the black carapace, the tough underskin membrane that was as hard as guard-issued flak armour and tough enough to stop a solid slug. Once through that, cutting too high would hit the fused ribcage. Trying to hack through that was futile, unless you were well-equipped. A space marine's bones were like iron, and their chest was one solid mass. The key, Sir Talgron knew, was to come in under the ribcage, a deep vertical slit just below the breastbone.
"It is a shame that Dawn is sending us away," said Jarilek
as he cut through flesh and sinew.
"All the guns of our fleet sitting up there in the shipyards around Luna, waiting to be unleashed at the most opportune moment. That would have been delightful."
"Dawn is no fool," said Sir Talgron. "We knew this was a possibility, which is why we have our contingencies. The comet, the shipyards, our allies on Mars and such. The charges remain primed, yes?"
"They do," said Jarilek. "Loth did his job well. When they blow, they'll think the psychic levee's simply overloaded. There will be mayhem, panic. More importantly, they'll be blinded. It could take months before they are able to send or receive any astropathic missives beyond the solar system."
"Good," said Sir Talgron.
Lord Aurelian will not be pleased that we are being shunted off Terra. If we were still garrisoned here when the final push came...
We have done what we can in preparation, said Sol Talgron. We've used our time here well. And now for the last surprise.
Volkar Reth lay paralyzed and close to death on his back on the floor, atop a heavy canvas drop sheet stained dark with blood. They had stripped him of the robe he'd been wearing, and his yellow body glove had been cut away, baring his heavily muscled body. His skin was slick with gore. He gave a muted groan, his head twitching in agony, as Jarolek pushed his hand into the cut in his abdomen, pressing into his body cavity, groping upwards. His tongue was gone, torn from his mouth at its root. It lay on the floor, discarded. A length of chain was between his teeth, wrapped around the back of his neck like a gag. Bleeding, ruinous symbols were sliced into the meat of his chest, thighs, shoulders and neck. Jarolek had made his flesh a bloody parchment for his work. An eight-pointed star had been carved into his forehead, deep enough to score it upon his skull.
"Was it wise to tell Dorne you were on the comet?" said Jarolek.
"The best lies have an element of truth to them," said Sor Talgron. "He would have known if I had spoken false."
"Was the task complete?"
"No," said Sor Talgron, bitterness tinging his words. "With Dorne's return, I had to leave it unfinished. I left a contingent behind with Iberix to complete the task."
Jarolek paused in his bloody work, glancing up at his captain.
"That is a death sentence," he said.
"Iberix volunteered. He will do the Legion proud when their time comes. Now get on with it. We've been here too long already."
Jarolek nodded sagely and focused back on the task at hand.
"I take no pleasure in this defilement," Sor Talgron said to Volkar Reth.
He was standing back, away from the bloody work, arms folded across his chest.
"This is just a means to an end. You are just another tool in my arsenal, a weapon to be unleashed. The war will come to Terra, and the palace will fall. You'll be a part of that."
The Dark Apostle pulled his bloody arm from within Reth's torso. He held the tortured word-bearer's primary heart in his hand. It was still pumping, the severed arteries and veins oozing blood with each laboring convulsion. The predicant's eyes were wide as he stared up at his own still-beating heart. His breathing was coming in short, sharp gasps. His secondary heart would have kicked in by now. A legionary could live for a time like this.
"The flask?" said Jarolek.
There were two glass vessels that Jarolek had set aside before he had begun his work. One had something oily and writhing within it. The other was empty, but for a measure of inky fluid. Sor Talgron unstoppered the lid of this second flask and held it out, and Jarolek slid Reth's heart into it before sealing it shut.
"The other one," said Jarolek, gesturing. "Give it to me quickly."
"I will not touch it," said Sor Talgron,
holding up the vessel containing Reth's heart before him. It had stopped beating. With a hiss, Jarolek stood and retrieved the flask himself before kneeling once more before Volkar Reth. The legionary's face was pallid and his eyes were unfocused. His breathing had shallowed. His body was shutting down, putting him into hibernation. Jarolek muttered a string of unwords that made his mouth bleed and the candlelight flicker. He slammed the flask in his hand into the stone floor, and a spiderweb of cracks grazed its glass surface. Dark liquid seeped from the cracks, oily and steaming, and a stench like spoiled meat filled the air. The wriggling thing inside went wild, thrashing and undulating, pressing against its fractured prison. Jarolek still held it in his hand as pieces of glass began to fall away, and worm-like appendages the colour of a bruise probed their way free. Volkar Reth had now faded out of consciousness, his breathing slowing until it was barely perceptible. Jarolek leant over him, still speaking in the tongue of the demon, blood dripping from his lips. Tainted glass fell from the shattered flask as the thing held within struggled to emerge. Saw Talgron could feel its presence, clawing at the edges of his mind as it strained to haul itself into reality. The squirming thing in the flask was but a tiny part of the creature. The rest dwelt in the roiling chaos of the warp.
"If I can feel that, others may," he snarled. "Control it!"
"This room is shielded," said Jarilek. "No one will pick up anything."
"Just be quick about it."
Jarilek thrust the broken flask into the gash he had carved in Volkarreth's body and pushed it up into the void where his heart had been. He pulled his hand out and wiped away the oily residue. Volkarreth shuddered, his body convulsing. His eyes shot open, a look of unutterable horror ingrained in them. He moaned, shaking his head from side to side. He looked up at Saw Talgron pleadingly. He was managing to gasp, though the muscles of his neck were bulging, the veins in his temples straining fit to burst. He tried to scream, to beg, to curse them, but he could not. Saw Talgron felt a shudder in the flask in his hand. He lifted it, wonder and disgust warring for his attention. The predicant's heart within had started beating once more.
"It's working," said Saw Talgron.
"It is bonding with him," said Jarilek.
He was stitching up Reth's midsection, pulling the skin tight and sewing it shut with thick thread and a jagged hook. It was crude work and hurried, but it would suffice. When he was done, he wiped blood from his mouth with the back of his hand.
"These wards will contain it," he said, gesturing vaguely to the symbols carved in Reth's flesh. "Until the time is right."
"And then the minds of these frozen psychers will power its release," said Saw Talgron.
"Correct,"
said Jarilek.
"As I said, if it doesn't work, I will cut your throat."
"It will likely be some years before we know."
"I can wait," said Saw Talgron.
He placed a hand upon Volkarreth's bloody brow.
"I'm sorry, old friend," he said.
Almost willfully, a burning white-green mist fell upon one of the siege squad legionaries as the doors slid open. He staggered, steam rising from his armour, which instantly began to hiss, its surface dissolving as the phosphex began to work. Saw Talgron and one of the other word-bearers hauled the stricken legionary back, but the damage was done. They dumped him on the floor as his heavy plate began to blister and crack. It was his rubberized armor seals that were compromised first, but he roared as his flesh began to sizzle and burn inside his plate. The floor beneath him began to hiss as the corrosive chemical mist began to eat away at it. Burning vapors crawled across the landing pad. The mountains were on the very edge of one of the detonations, yet even so, the carnage was devastating. Everything touched by it was being voraciously devoured. Metal dissolved as though bathed in acid, and the bare rock blazed with green fire. Even the air itself was being consumed in the choking metallic clouds.
"Gods," swore Loth.
"The ships!"
The word-bearer's craft were gone. The 13th Legion lighter craft was there, but a glance assured Saw Talgron that it was not taking them anywhere. The cockpit canopy sagged inwards, liquefied by corrosive alchemical poisons, and its metal fuselage was dissolving before his eyes. There was no way off the platform. The fallen legionary was sinking into the floor as it sagged and melted beneath him. His screams were almost pitiful, so Saw Talgron ended him quickly with his combat blade. The flooring gave way, and the body of the word-bearer dropped into the conveyor shaft. The corrosion in the floor was spreading.
"Out!"
he ordered. The platform was burning, but the corrosive mist had not yet consumed it. There were still pockets of safety. In the distance, alchemical flames were engulfing the mountains, flowing over them like an avalanche. They were lucky here, he realized. The other mountains must have acted as a buffer, an aegis protecting them from the worst of the phosphex fallout. but the rising mist was coming for them at high speed. They had a matter of minutes at best.
Dal'ak!
Snarled Saw Talgron, scanning the skies.
And the Vox is still out, said Loth.
Get a flare up,
ordered Saw Talgron. Before the recon sergeant could comply with his captain's orders, however, they caught sight of a final missile screaming down through the upper atmosphere. It disappeared beyond the mountains, but it wasn't hard to judge that it would fall closer to them than any other had. They didn't feel the impact underfoot, not right away. The shock wave would take some time to reach them, but when it did, it would be devastating. Nor did they hear anything at first. There was a retina-burning flash, however. It blanketed the sky. The optic dampeners of Saw Talgron's helmet cancelled out the searing blast, saving his eyes and turning everything dark as they compensated. In the wake of the detonation, a giant cloud of roiling dust, smoke, and pale flame rose into the air, its momentum building even as it soared into the stratosphere. The fallout of that detonation roared over the tops of the mountains in a searing, burning shockwave, hurtling towards them in a wall over a dozen kilometers high. That wall obliterated the peaks from view, one after another, coming at them at colossal speed. There was no way to outrun it. There was nothing to do but stand and watch as it howled towards them, consuming everything in its wake. It was death, and it was coming for them. There was no way anyone would believe that one of Gilliman's sons would sanction the use of Phosphex on such a scale, particularly against one of their own worlds. Saw Talgron knew that his own legion would be blamed for this atrocity.
Perhaps this is what we deserve, he muttered.